Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis, and a very special guest. We have our Island MP, Andrew Turner, with us today. Welcome, Andrew.
Morning.
Andrew may have issues with time, so we may only have him for half the programme, so till about 12:30, or he may stay the whole time, so we'll have to wait and see. But whatever happens, we're going to, don't miss this first half hour, because we're going to have some lively chat, I think. So, Andrew, you've represented the Isle of Wight in Parliament since 2001.
That's right.
Yeah. And what challenges has that brought you in that time?
I think the key challenge is keeping up to date, because it's very easy to draw up a picture of what happened in 2001 and still repeating the same things, whereas actually the island has changed in some ways.
Indeed.
And we must keep up to date.
Yes. And what do you think your biggest achievement has been while you've been here?
Well, there's no doubt that one of my big achievements was ensuring that the hospital stayed on this island, because there were threats, there were possibilities of closing the hospital altogether.
Right.
And that we worked very hard to prevent happening.
So that's unimaginable, isn't it?
Well, you'd think so, but the NHS didn't think so, and they looked at it, certainly. And we managed to get about 60,000 signatures, quite apart from the other things we'd done to work for that.
I think it's probably saved a lot of lives, hasn't it? Like I say, my family have used that hospital, and I can't imagine not having. It's a ludicrous suggestion not to have a hospital on the island.
Well, if you think about it, there were only two issues on which they could not provide off the island to the benefit they felt of people on the island, and those were maternity and emergency.
Yes.
So those are the only two which we have on the island, which they felt it was absolutely necessary that we continue to have those things on the island. So we were very lucky.
Yes. I can't really imagine all those sick people feeling, you know, ill enough without having to make the ferry journey to the mainland or be flown over. Just hideous. And if there was something, you know, looking back, that you think, well, with the benefit of hindsight, what might you do differently?
That's always much more difficult, because I'm an optimist and I tend to look forward rather than look backwards. There are always opportunities to put things right, make things clearer, speak about them more clearly, and those things. I don't think there's a particular issue, but many times I've thought, if I'd just looked at that beforehand, done my homework, it does happen.
Yes, I mean, that's a good lesson for us all, isn't it, to prepare well. But do you think in not kind of seeing that there might have been something that could have been done better, do you think that prohibits anything being done, you know, in an improved way going forward?
Well, there are very few things, thankfully, on which we take an issue and that's it. I mean, I'm very happy with where we've gone on the common market this last month.
Yes.
Because it was one of the things I always felt we were wrong, and now I believe the majority of people have signed up to that.
So do you think going forward that the island is ultimately going to benefit from that?
Oh, yes.
Really?
Absolutely, yes, yes.
In what ways?
Well, we as a whole country, we've become a free country again, and that had not happened for 40 years.
Yeah, I mean, that. I suppose that sounds very idealistic, but at the G20 summit earlier this week, you know, we've got Barack Obama saying that he believed Britain was wrong to vote to leave the EU and suggested that we'd be at the back of the queue for any new trade deal.
Well, if... fortunately, he doesn't have a vote in this country.
No.
There were 48% of people who would agree with some of the things that he was saying. We took a different view, and it's as easy as that. Some people believe one thing, some people believe another.
Yes, I suppose it's a classic that only time will tell, won't it?
That's
really,
right.
This is so early days for such a huge change.
You're right, but I would say we've made the decision we're going to be a much more free country to do the things we want. So we will be working not only with 27 countries in Europe, but with the whole world, and that's a great difference. And also, we are doing the things we want when we decide to do them, or at least certainly when we've signed and left the common market. And that has a big difference, because otherwise we depend on them to do the talking to Canada, India, Australia for us. Yeah. Instead, we would have to do those things ourselves, and that would be jolly good.
Okay, one question, because we live on an island and a lot of the rural economy comes from farming, one key question I want to put to you is, will island farmers receive the same amount of financial support that they receive from the EU?
Well, they certainly will up until 2020, and then there will have to be consideration as to where we do push that. In other words, we're doing what the common market was going to do, or is going to do anyway, up until 2020. They have to make decisions about the future for the people left in the common market. We will make decisions ourselves. But I see no reason why we should stop spending on farms in the way that that's done. But we could make those decisions here in this country rather than, again, made in Europe.
Right. And again, for the assisted area status, which provides economic support for island firms, will that be maintained now and extended to the whole island?
Well, I don't know. That's something which now is the responsibility of the UK. So that's a decision which would be made in the UK, even if we were still remaining in the common market.
It's a very tricky situation, isn't it? Like, because it's something totally new, and obviously the people who were against this decision can only see it as a retrograde step, can't they?
Yes, and I think that's got something to do with age. There's no doubt, in my view. There's a great difference between going back in a way which we've done, and it happened to be the way in which I voted in 1975. Mm. Yes, 1975. Whereas those who've grown up in the 80s and got a vote in the 200s, 2000s, they haven't got the experience of what the United Kingdom was like before the common market.
Well, that's true, yes. Yeah, I mean, that was another issue I wanted to come on to, that the young vote, the youth of today, a lot of them feel very sort of disassociated from politics, don't they? They're not necessarily that engaged or as engaged as perhaps politicians would like them to be. What are you doing in order to make things relevant for them?
Well, I think it's the best way to treat people is to treat them as a unit. I would always want to speak to individuals, but I must be very careful not to say one thing to one group of people and something in a different direction the other. So I'm trying very hard to be honest. But I think it's true at any stage. You know, 40 years ago, it was much the same.
Oh, yes, probably. Yeah. But I think this, you know, at the general election, there was a lot said about the young people not using their right to vote, wasn't there? And there was a lot of frustration from older people that was the way, when people had worked so hard to kind of get the vote and everything, that they weren't using it. But they weren't using it because they didn't feel, as I say, in any way engaged. And their cry was they didn't understand. So what do you say to, as you say, you talk to people as a unit, what would you say to that unit of people, those young people that didn't vote in the last general election?
Well, I think, let's be quite clear, it is up to them as well as it's up to us. We've got to try to make things clear and simple, and they've got to pop up to the polling station and put their cross in the right box. And so both sides have a contribution. What I would always do is try to make things clear, and sometimes that will be things which people would say, is it something which are relevant? And I think a lot of people have done that in the past, and I think they'll go on doing that. I think the difference is there's a bit more energy behind youngsters, and actually youngsters have much better chance of voting now, well, than they did 40 years ago.
Absolutely, but I think young people now, they want everything in a soundbite, don't they? Their attention spans have been proved to be so much sort of less now with the onset of the computer, with texting. Everything has to be done here and now and in as few characters as possible. And I think they need to know, or they feel they want to know about politics in the same sort of easy soundbite way, don't they? They don't have to work too hard at it.
Well, that's a very good point, yes. And one of the jobs of an MP is to make it as simple as you can, bearing in mind that there's a whole range of people, the very tiny minority who read in great detail,
yes,
and those who, for the majority, spend 2 minutes per day.
Yes, top lining.
That's right, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, and I suppose, just going back to the Brexit, when I was trying to find, I don't know about anybody else, but when I personally was trying to find information as to which way to vote, and I was going online and I was reading up, initially it was very hard to find anything that was clear and coherent,
mm-hmm,
from both sides, you know,
yes,
just pros and cons of both votes was,
yes,
what I was really looking for. The kind of idiot's guide, I suppose, to Brexit voting would have helped me enormously. But that seemed a long time coming, and slowly that emerged. But I think it seemed to me that the bottom line was nobody really knows until it happens.
And indeed, until well after it happens.
Yes, exactly.
And that you're right. I think there were two issues, though. Firstly, from the Leavers group, we felt we were getting somewhere when the government stopped pushing stuff in, because there were two groups, the Leavers and,
yes,
the Remainers.
Yes.
And the government was also there, and when they stopped contributing, as the requirements are of law, there was a fairer debate. I also think that there were far fewer people like the American president who came in, said something, said, in my view, the wrong thing, and made us feel, or tried to make us feel, we've got to take more account of what he's saying than our experience here. Actually, it had the reverse effect.
Yes, but of course, when somebody like that comes in and has that amount of power, most powerful man in the world, I suppose, he puts that out there, then it is going to make the man in the street question their own judgment,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes,
so,
yeah.
And, yeah, because, yeah, exactly. I think that it's very difficult for, you know, people like me who take a sort of average interest in things to get their heads around the ins and outs of politics and what goes on. I mean, it's a real, I don't know, it seems such a Machiavellian environment.
I don't think it's trying to be Machiavellian. I think people are trying to say things both clearly and accurately.
But I think that's more how it's often perceived,
yes,
rather,
yes,
than perhaps the actual, but
yeah,
that's how.
You know. That's right, yes. And in a way, you've got to use up your 2 minutes on the most clear bit of the story.
Right.
And if you're going to spend more time, then you get more detail. But we can't do it the other way round, because otherwise people who only spend 2 minutes aren't getting even that bit of information.
No, exactly. Well, I guess if you can't say it in two, you know, it's like writing commercials, isn't it? You've got to kind of get that 2 minutes in, and you've got to get your soundbite in and make it as clear as possible.
Yeah.
And I know we might be short for time, so sorry to sort of jump in with this, but I think it's very important today because it's hit the county press. The plans for a potential devolution to join forces with Southampton and Portsmouth councils for the island.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're not keen on this, so do you want to tell us a bit about that, Andrew?
Well, I think we've got to get clarity from the county council and the mainland authorities, Portsmouth and Southampton. We need to know, are other areas going to join in? And if we're going to have a decision in October, which I think is too early, certainly, we need to know things like how is the money actually going to be spent, or indeed before that, how much money there's going to be, because we've been told all this vague stuff, and the facts aren't there yet, in my view. And, you know, the sort of things we're looking at, for instance, is planning.
Yes.
There's highways. There's the university proposal. I mean, some of these are in the packet, and some of these are outside the packet. Right. Well, we've got to know what's in the packet.
Yes.
And what's going to go outside. And so we're talking about increasing the number of houses, which is already far too large, in my view, building on the island. We're proposing to increase that still further. And I think that's a serious threat.
But so how about housing for people without sufficient housing?
Well, first of all, you have to say, where do these people come from? Are they people from the island, or are they people from other parts of the country? Because I don't believe there's any obligation for us to house people from elsewhere. And secondly, we must ask, and I think we must ask now in relation to the common market issue, is the number of people coming from other parts of Europe? We've accepted that that those people are going to come now, but are we going to go on giving space in this country to more and more people, because that's 300,000 people per year? We promised that we would reduce the number of people coming to this country down to 100,000. Now, that's a substantial reduction in the number of people coming here.
Indeed, but given the Secretary of State for Communities and Local Government, the Right Honourable Greg Clark, MP, has said that the island's only opportunity to secure any additional funding and support from government is to follow this devolution plan. What's your response to
Well,
that?
I'm not sure he said that. You've
quote.
Got, the, and it's a quote from whom?
That's from the Right Honourable Greg Clark.
Yes,
MP,
but
from the County Press website.
Right. Okay. Well, I don't believe that's true. And anyway, he's lost that. He's ceased to be in that job now. We've got another minister,
uh-huh.
And that other ministry is, I think, a bit more.
Yes, that's actually Councillor Jonathan Bacon quoting that from Brent.
Right,
Carver.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Paraphrasing that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we know that the Islands Council is in dire straits, don't we?
We do, you're right. And that's partly because it's been run so badly. We've had no leaders.
Yeah. And we're now, so Councillor Jonathan Bacon is saying he sees this as, you know, a bit of a lifeline, I suppose.
Yes. Now, what we've got to look at now is, where can money also come? And, for instance, we've got the new ASDA opening up. There is money in that packet, if you like, which we can spend, which doesn't require us to join a mainland idea.
Mm-hmm.
And that will reduce the amount that we are trying to fill this gap.
So, in terms of our economy as an island, you think we can remain self-sufficient?
I wouldn't say self-sufficient, but I would say we don't. We've got a range of choices, one of which is the three authorities, one of which is Hampshire and the island. Another alternative is not to join either. So there are a number of things. The great problem is there's hardly any discussion about it. It suddenly emerged as, we've got to do this, and we don't know the figures, we don't know the numbers.
So will we get to vote on this?
Well, I thought we were, but I think that's something which may disappear.
So it could just happen?
It could, well, in a way, yes.
And but how soon would that be?
Well, I think it would probably, the earliest date seems to me to be April next year.
Gosh, I mean, that
yes.
really is.
Yes.
From nowhere, really, because I think we've all had our head in the Brexit cloud for
That's
a long
right.
time.
Yes.
And now all of a sudden, this hot potato has come along and people are saying, well, that's our only choice. choice.
Yes.
Yet again, without perhaps knowing.
And that is wrong. We must certainly give people the opportunity to understand what's being spoken about. And yet, we're not having another meeting until October. There was going to be one this month. That's been dropped. I don't know quite why.
So, I know, you know, speaking to people prior to you coming onto the show, and, you know, people saying, well, we are in dire straits. We know that. That's no secret. And people are disenfranchised. There's high unemployment. There's, you know, people can't find places to live. How you know, social services have been hit left, right and centre. And we haven't got used to it, but it's just the state of where we're at now. How do you, as the Island MP, see that improving? And what would you want to do about that?
Well, it won't surprise you that I say we've got to, among other things, change the leadership from these independents who appear to have no view to one of the genuine political parties, which happens next year.
Right, so, but in terms of what you want to do, I mean, there's change in the leadership, but is there anything more that you can do as RMP to help these people that feel, you know, that they're at the lower sort of ends?
Oh, yes.
And they need support, they need help.
Yes,
they feel they're just not getting
it. I have the opportunity to, and indeed I did, this week. I met both the Secretary of State, that's Javid Sajed, and Marcus, who's his deputy, on two different occasions, and I can discuss these things, and these are the things we've got to emphasise, and we've got the party conference coming up in later this month.
So you're saying you've got the best interests of you know, the more disenfranchised, the less fortunate on the island in your sights?
If you like, it's more important that I work for the people who can't get their view heard, mm-hmm. than it is to speak about those who can.
Yeah, and obviously those people come within that remit, don't they?
That's right, yes, yeah. Yes.
Okay, well, it's been lovely talking to you, Andrew. Are you going to join us for the second half? Oh, well, fantastic. Okay, great. Well, Andrew's going to stay, so please stay tuned. And more from Andrew Turner, Island MP, after the break. Thank you for listening.
The Lunchtime Social Debate is sponsored by jobs on the isleofwight.co.uk. If you're looking for work or if you're looking for staff, please call Jobs on the Isle of Wight on 01983 564 880.
www.vectisradio.com.
See how the Romans lived and worked on the Isle of Wight. Brading Roman Villa and Cafe are housed in a modern, eco-friendly building, offering easy access for everyone without climbing stairs or walking miles. It's an oasis of peace and tranquility, set away from busy roads, with plenty of space for children to play in safely, and there's free parking too. The villa also has a gallery for local artists, where works for sale are displayed. Enjoy the spacious, licensed cafe with its stunning panoramic view of Sandown Bay, in which you'll find locally sourced food and drinks and a tempting selection of homemade cakes from our chefs, Ben and Nikki. Then visit the award-winning museum with its welcome shade. There's a volunteer guide to explain it to you. Explore 10,000 years of domestic life with a great selection of activities included in the entry price and some of the best Roman mosaics in Europe. But really, there's so much more to Brading Roman Villa than the Romans. There's also food, art, meadows, and peace for the whole family. Open from 10 a.m. until 5 p.m. every day. Come to Brading Roman Villa and treat yourself.
Having problems with your phone? Or are your electrics on the blink? Maybe you need your appliances or your building wiring tested. Or just a light fitted. West Wight Audio and Electrical Services can help you. For friendly, reliable service, call Kelvin on 754666 or click westwhiteaudio.co.uk. All island coverage.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of all ages, welcome to the Four Piece Project. 11 to 19 year olds are welcome to the course. The course is 100% free, and it contains podcasting, learn it, upload it, say it, mean it, talk to it, presentation, know it, promote it, make it, create it. And that's just the surface of the project. Come along to the Riverside Centre in Newport and contact Macca at ian.mac@vectusradio.com.
All we hear is Radio Caca.
The weekend starts early. It's Wham Bam Alama time. Your 2-hour tonic of rock and roll. We're playing rockers, rollers, smoochers and doo-wop in that great era of music. So join me, the old boy, every Friday, 3 to 5pm, for a whole lot of shaking. Only on Vectis Radio. Goodness gracious, great walls of vinyl.
Stay
social and get in touch. Add us on Skype. It's Vectis.radio. The World Wide Web never felt so local.
The Lunchtime Social Debate is sponsored by Jobs on the isleofwight.co.uk. If you're looking for work or if you're looking for staff, please call Jobs on the Isle of Wight on 01983 564 880.
Hello and welcome back to this week's edition of Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis, and a very special guest, Ireland MP, Andrew Turner. Welcome back, Andrew.
Hello.
Hi. During the break, Andrew threw a bit of curveball in and said he would like to talk about cannabis. So over to you, Andrew.
Well, I'm a bit concerned about the extent on which cannabis is enjoyed by people on the island, and I'm rather concerned also that we're not getting it home to individuals, that it can be almost as dangerous, perhaps even more dangerous, to people about to give birth as are alcohol and cigarettes.
Okay, do you feel it's a bigger problem on the island than anywhere else? Do you think people here are indulging more than anywhere else across the country?
I wouldn't like to say whether it's worse, because I have no knowledge, but it is certainly a fact that we've got. And one of the problems is that it's one of the things that you don't... It's regarded with as a bit of a joke item, and it doesn't really matter if you don't, if you smoke a couple of cannabis. And I'm rather concerned, A, for mothers,
yes,
but actually B, for gentlemen as well, because men also run the risk of making them less able to father children in the future.
So it affects their fertility.
It does.
Yes, okay. So, and for pregnant mothers, what are you saying are the risks there?
Well, the risks there are much the same as alcohol and cigarettes, and they're something which... lower birth weight, yes, yes. And problems of other things, such as inability within one's head
to make the right decisions.
Yeah.
So what are you saying, that you want, your remit is to raise awareness of this?
Well, I was in the hospital this morning and I spoke about these two, alcohol and cigarettes, and yet cannabis is also something which we tend to, whereas cigarettes and alcohol are taking a bit of the rap.
Yes.
For problems which we didn't understand when I was born.
Exactly.
You know?
Yes.
Whereas now we get the message, but we haven't quite got the message across about cannabis.
That is taking years, isn't it? And a lot of money and
That's
a lot
right.
of campaigns.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
And people, you know, still have that choice whether they adhere to that and listen to that,
yes,
and take
yes.
that on board, or whether they don't.
That's right.
But so you're bringing cannabis into that field.
It is, and I'll have to do some further work on it, because it's something that came up this morning.
I think people see cannabis as one, a soft option,
yes,
and two, as you know, it's even seen to have health benefits, isn't
yes.
it, having pain relief.
Yeah.
And not as harmful, and it's not something I'm going to get into because, you know, I don't know the whys and wherefores, but you're saying that you now want to kind of raise awareness and champion that habit.
The first step is find out more.
Yes.
And that's where I'm going first of all.
Okay, well, good luck with that one. Can we just go back to education? Because I know it's a real passion of yours. You were a former teacher, weren't you? And
yes.
Both your parents were teachers. You were educated at Rugby and Keble College, Oxford. So you clearly have benefited from a very good education. I just want to take you back to, you know, some time ago when we had the former chairman of Ofsted, David Hoare, making controversial and inflammatory comments, not only about the education on the island, but us being a ghetto populated by British white poor, accused us of having the second worst local authority when it comes to secondary education and the third worst when it comes to primary education. You're on record as saying his comments were inaccurate, insulting, and extremely unhelpful. And I think a lot of people would agree with you on that one, Andrew. And you certainly backed that this resignation was clearly for the best. But what do you think, perhaps just to play devil's advocate here for a moment, do you think those derisory negative comments could possibly have a positive effect?
Well, some of the points made were wrong and some of them were right. And what he lost was his chance to say the things that really matter.
Okay, so what do you think it was right?
So, for instance, we were second worst in the country for secondary schools and third worst in the country for primary schools. And yet that has disappeared, or if we're not careful, that will disappear. Whereas on the other hand, he said something about coming here for Cows Week and enjoying themselves and ignoring the fact that 140,000 people live on the island and enjoy it all the year round and have the problems as well.
Yes.
And that was a bit careless, I thought.
Yes, I mean, those comments certainly didn't do him any good, did they? But I think they've left a lot of people, particularly teachers, smarting, and rightly so, because they do such a good job and an effective job with many of the pupils here and in very difficult circumstances.
Yes. And that the things you've pointed out are absolutely right. We must, however, and I'm not sure where we've got to this year, because I'm talking about last year's figures, but we were pretty low nationally, that is over England, last year, and let's hope we're a bit further up
the chain.
Why
do you think that is? What do you think the unique problems might be here?
Well, I think some of them are local specialities, if you like. It's obviously difficult to get teachers if teachers look at the results and say, well, I'm not going to apply for a job there.
Right.
Whereas there are plenty of other areas where the problems are the same, they just don't have an island to bring out the figures more clearly. So, for instance, look at North Cornwall, and you will probably find the same problem, most of the same problems.
Yes.
It's easier for them to come from, I don't know, Devon and teach and go back in the evening than it is for the island.
Yes, but then, of course, you know, if teachers are taking the attitude that they don't want to come and teach at what could be perceived as failing schools, then it's just perpetuating the same thing rather than seeing it as a challenge.
Yes, yes.
A personal challenge to raise standards.
Well, people are very, very unlikely to say, well, the thing I'm really enthusiastic about is the quality of teaching which I'm going to bring in to this poor school, but meanwhile I've got three children who aren't being educated as well as they had been on the mainland. Now, it's not the same.
Yes.
And
yes,
many people do take the decision to stay here, and that's welcome, but we've got to get more people who are willing to be looked at. And it's the same with, you know, doctors. Actually, the same problem affects doctors as it does education.
So how do we attract more top talent?
We improve standards. We've got to work very hard, and if necessary, we've got to perhaps spend more time with fewer assistants to teachers and more teachers themselves. I'm not sure whether we need non-teachers helping, in quotes, what's going on.
I suppose that depends on how well qualified they are.
Well, indeed.
My understanding is a lot of them are highly qualified for
yes,
that role.
Yes, yes. And the question
because
is,
they can't get jobs as teachers, they are having to get jobs as classroom assistants.
If that's the case, that's fine. But the question is it the best way to spend the money? And I think if you looked at two different secondary schools, I won't quote them, but you'll find some employ more teachers and fewer assistant teachers,
and
others do the opposite.
And so you're saying those results from those schools have proved to be better?
Well, they have been in one, certainly, yeah.
Yeah. I guess, going back to what we were saying, though, if you're a fully qualified teacher and you can't get a job as a teacher, and all that's open to you in order to earn money is to work as a classroom assistant, and that, you know, that's a great job in itself. But if you've taken that line to go forward as a teacher and you've got those qualifications, it's not good, is it, that's what's open to you when your profession is you want to be a teacher?
Well, if you want to be a teacher, you are in a competitive that area where if you're not one of the best X, you won't get a job. So you either go to the mainland or change your job. I'm afraid, you know, we can't put on teachers to give them a job.
No, I'm not saying you just give anybody a job, but obviously if they've qualified and they're the same as the next person in the queue and there's not sufficient jobs, there's only going to be, you know, only one person can ever get that job, can't
Yes,
they?
Yes.
Yeah. How long ago were you a teacher?
Oh, goodness me. 1978 to 1984, I think.
And it was a very different landscape, wasn't it, in schools in those days?
In some ways, yes. I taught at two different comprehensive schools. One of them was quite well regarded in Oxfordshire, where I taught. But I'm not sure I would have been satisfied. And I've not got my own children, so I don't know what the result feels like.
Mm-hmm.
But I was a bit concerned that even at this rather good school, things weren't... What they did was the school was very good for the most able.
Yes. So in that sense, it worked more like a grammar school, in that
it was a former grammar school.
Yes, so it picked off the top streams and focused on them.
But what they're doing is, let me be a bit more precise. The top 5% will always do well. The second 15% or 20%, you've got to work at, as you have to do so throughout the rest of the ability.
Yes, of course.
And what tended to happen was, You got the top five very, very well educated. It doesn't always happen as well further down the system.
Yes.
And that's one of the problems. And actually, I'll say another thing which is a bit controversial. I think secondary modern schools are very good for the less able.
In what way?
In that you spend your time teaching those people at the appropriate level. Whereas you tend to have the ability for a whole range, and that's too large a range in some schools.
Yes, but I suppose it depends. I mean, in 1978, I mean, that's when I was in the sixth form, was when you were teaching, although obviously not, yeah, I wasn't at the same school as you. But as I said, it's a very different landscape. Have you been into schools now? Because they operate in such a different way, don't they?
Well, I have, of course, been in, but whether I understand it, that's a matter I'd like teachers to tell me where they think I'm missing things
and
out.
Ways of learning and behaviour and influences on those young people seem a million miles away from 1978 to me.
Yes, I agree.
In terms of discipline and... where they stand in the world is so very different.
And
their needs and their wants and their demands.
Yes.
Very different.
Yes.
So, you know, you're dealing with very different raw material now to what perhaps you were.
We are, and sometimes there are things which I would like to resurrect, and sometimes you say, well, thank goodness that's gone.
Yeah, and I mean, going back to the secondary modern, I can remember, I mean, this is just a personal experience, I can remember failing my 11 plus first off, and... I was going to go to a secondary modern, and then because of my age I was allowed to resit and I got into a grammar school. But there was a perception then of them failing so many children and writing those children off at a very young age, age 11, to then be written off, you know.
Well, that's true, and I was very lucky because I was educated second, at Rugby, but before that at a grammar school.
Yes.
And there were good secondary modern schools in Rugby as well. And it was just something they happened to be good at.
Yes.
They did the job that people then thought was appropriate. Others in other towns did it rather less well.
And, you know, like I said, you went on to study at Oxford, so you used the education that you had, you did extremely well, and now, as a result of that, partly as a result of that, you're the voice of the island people, aren't you?
Which is a
kind of heavy cloak to wear, I imagine.
Yes, yes.
At times.
Yeah.
So how do you think you're perceived as an MP? Like I say, you've been RMP since 2001, Andrew Turner. So how do you think that your constituents see you?
It's very hard to answer that, and I'd rather you got my voters to say what they thought and then didn't kindly say so on the radio. But I think we just have to do as much as we can to do the things we want to do.
So and kind of carry on regardless in a way and just get done. Well, the matter in hand.
It's more than, it isn't just regardless, because obviously there are things which emerge, yes. And this is, and that's really what makes an MP different for every constituency. On the island, I've got experience which many, not experience, I've got knowledge gained from having to do work which many MPs don't have to do.
Yes, so we've got very special needs.
That's
and
right.
Wants,
yeah, and I'm sure
unique.
The same is true for people from Aberavon.
Yeah, and London.
Yeah,
so, yeah,
yeah,
exactly. Everywhere. So I suppose I could come at it another way. You must have to be. You and all politicians must have to be very thick-skinned, because you're first in the line for brickbats, aren't you? And people will pin all their kind of the issues when things don't go the way they voted, don't go right, on you, and you become almost like a soundbite. So you're there. You're the somebody to throw the rotten eggs at.
Well,
how does that feel as a person?
Very few people throw rotten eggs.
Oh,
and
no.
That's I know you.
Metaphorically.
Yes, metaphorically. But people are very kind, and they will come, and if the worst comes to the worst, they will come and see me. And
right.
That is the absolutely basic right that they have. And they're the thing that very few other countries have, the right to come and visit your Member of Parliament. There is only one person who represents you. He's got to deal with his problems, your problems. Whereas if looking again at the common market, we had 5, 7, can't remember, 8 MPs. You didn't know which one was responsible for you.
No, I see what you mean. So you have very much, I know you have your surgeries, but you as a person, would you say you have a very open door policy?
Yes, but more than that, you have a right to ask
yes.
me what I...
Yes,
yeah.
But you welcome that.
Yes,
you don't
yes.
see sort of facing your constituents as a sort of burden. You see it as something that you welcome.
Yes, yes, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, so that brings me on to my next question, which was, do you see yourself as a representative of your constituencies or of your political party?
Oh, everyone. I mean, there can be no doubt. Number one is number one actually is nationally. Number one is Britain's needs. Number two is the island, and number three is the Conservative Party.
Right. Okay. So you'd put constituents above your political party?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm sure we're pleased to hear that. What do you plan to do specifically for the island, just very quickly, in the remainder of your term? Have you got any key plans we haven't touched on?
I think the amazing thing about being an MP is things change, and they can change very quickly.
Yes, yes.
And we, you know, after the referendum, we thought we were going through a 3-month selection of one of the Conservatives to become leader. And actually she was in the job in 2 weeks' time. So you've got to be there and listening. But there are some things which I'm interested in, and they're probably nothing to do with the island, actually.
Oh, right.
I'm quite interested in what has happened over the past 100 years in Armenia.
Okay.
Where 1.5 million people were murdered.
Yeah. But in terms of the island, is there anything else that we haven't touched on that you would...
I'm sure there is, but...
Nothing pressing.
Nothing pressing at this moment.
Okay. What's the best advice have you ever received, and what would you give someone? If you could, you just had one sentence, what would it be?
Be honest.
Be honest.
However much I can say what the party says, or for that matter the government says, in the end you've got to stand up and defend your position, and you will not do that accurately by trying to dodge.
Well, yeah, and there's the, you know, that old saying, your lies will always find you out.
Yes, yes.
I think it's very true, isn't
yeah,
it? You know,
yeah,
I think the older you get, the more you see that.
Yes, yes, and the easier it becomes actually to be truthful.
Yes, I mean, I think, again, a lot of people would, you know, would say that politicians as a whole can be very mendacious and not be wholly truthful with their with the public. I think that's fair to say, isn't it?
Well, I'm sure we make mistakes, and I wouldn't say any other MP is better or worse than me. And I know, and the people on the island know, what they trust me about.
Right.
They probably won't know as much about what the MP for Aberavon thinks.
Okay. So, what do you... If there was one thing about Andrew Turner that you could change in terms of being an MP, what would it be? What would you say your moot point is, your Achilles heel?
I think I would try harder to do the homework in advance rather than do it on the day.
Yes. Yeah. I imagine you have... I mean, yes, absolutely. You've got to. You can't not do it, can you? Because, again, that will trip you up, I should think. It must be... And what a platform to kind of trip up on.
Yeah.
Must be horrific.
Did you hear him yesterday? One of the candidates in the United States, neither Mr. Trump nor Mrs. Clinton, but a third candidate, said, "Where's Aleppo?"
Oh.
And his case was collapsed.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Mm. Yes. No, you can't have one of those moments, can you?
No, no.
You can't afford them because it's career-ending, or at least career-defining.
Yes.
The rest of us can sort of muddle along, I suppose.
Yes,
but,
yes.
Not the light. Yes, if you're going to put yourself above the parapet in that global way, then that cannot happen. People ask me, so I feel I can ask you, you know, why don't I just retire? Why don't I just put my feet up and sit on the beach all day? What's next for you? When do you see retirement coming, or is that anathema to you?
It's anathema. I really love the job.
Okay.
And I can't think of a better way of spending my time. I would hate being left on a beach, whether in...
We could never marry Andrew.
No,
never
well,
married.
Right, good old. That wasn't personal.
Yeah. So, what is it that you love? You've just said you're really passionate about your job. What's so passionate? What are you... Just to end on, tell me why you love it so much.
Because it's helping people. I know that sounds very trite.
It's not trite. It's the thing you're... That's the main part of your job, isn't it?
Yes.
It's what you're
there
for.
It is. Well, but to be honest, there are things which are dull as ditch water to most people, and I spend 2.5 hours in 3 days in a week looking at a particular bill. And we're doing things which many people wouldn't do, which is also important.
Indeed. Okay, well, Andrew Turner, Island MP, I've enjoyed talking to you very much today. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you. And thank you for listening. Please join me again next week when I'll be talking to Judy Stone Street and Linda Edge. Their sisters have collaborated on a book. One's done the pictures, one's done the words, a children's book. And Linda also does a lot of charity work, so we'll be talking to Linda about that. So enjoy the island, and I'll speak to you again soon. Take care. Bye-bye now.